From CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Ira Nadell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Tonight, Alessandra Nakarato, a first-year student in the MFA program and an accomplished spoken word poet. Greetings. It's really great to see you here.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to begin with your interest in spoken word poetry. I mean, how did this happen? When did it begin?
It began a very long time ago. I had a really wonderful teacher at a radical alternative school I went to in Toronto who brought Howell into our grade 10 English class and introduced us to Allen Ginsberg. And I was like, oh, finally, a poetry that speaks in a voice that I understand and can access. And I just started writing that way and finding places to perform. So, yeah.
And so it starts in high school but continues over the years through university?
Yeah, I did an undergraduate in creative writing at Concordia University in Montreal. And while I was there, started running a series of public performances, kind of interdisciplinary arts events, and publishing a zine series and performing a lot of spoken word at festivals and events around town. And since then have just continued and became very involved in the Poetry Slam community across Canada and have traveled and been part of that for many years.
So what do I need to do to become a spoken word poet?
I mean, it starts with creation. I do a lot of workshops. I try and go into as many high schools, as many community centers as I can, and offer writing workshops. And I think that usually people arrive at spoken word poetry either from finding a teacher who introduces it to them or by seeing it online or in live performance. And once you start creating your own work, it's really just getting on stage and being willing to put yourself out there and maybe not even do a great job at the beginning. We always kind of suck when we start any new art form. So just, you know, arriving with your own story.
So how does it differ from rap?
How does it differ from rap? Well, in a lot of ways, I guess there are connections and similarities. Spoken word is really this multifaceted, huge genre that can connect to a lot of different disciplines. So there's a lot of people who approach spoken word in a similar way that they would approach rap, and people who perform like a cappella hip hop, which, you know, very connected. There's other people who start out as stand-up comedians who then arrive in spoken word. And it's, all of it is really effective. So within the genre, there's a lot of room for cross-discipline collaboration, and that's one of the things that I love about it so much.
So do you think it's the art or the performance that actually pulls people to spoken word poetry?
I think that a lot of the performative aspects are really like codified and written into the text. And for that reason, there's been points where people have misunderstood the complexity of spoken word texts. I think both pull people in, the language, the writing, and the performance. But what's unique to it as a form of literature is the community aspect, because we work with audience, we pay a lot of attention to audience, and in coming together to speak and to listen and to speak and to listen, we're in presence with each other, and that is hugely transformative and an element that you don't always get in art in general. So it's a really huge part of it.
Yes, I would think actors would experience the same sort of excitement performing, even rehearsing, and working with other actors, and display a kind of commonality in terms of the challenges and in terms of the technique and how to really succeed in terms of what they're doing. Does the genre have a history? Is there a history of spoken word poetry? Well, give us a thumbnail sketch.
I mean, I would say that the history is like one of the oldest, because if you think about oral literature, that really predates any kind of page written text, and we've always been doing this. We've always been sitting around the fire sharing story, and that is the root of it, and I think that's why young people are drawn to it, why you reach across such big communities of people is that there's something innate in us that tells stories, and we do it by voice much more naturally than we do it even on paper. So I really, it has, I would say that's its history. But it also really came forward in like 1920s Harlem Renaissance, when people started to look at how the form of the poetry could reflect the concept that they were talking about. So how is like social resistance reflected in the form of our literature? And so people like Langston Hughes reflecting jazz through language and speech patterns. And, you know, the Beats really took, carried that forward, continued on with that work. But that began more in the 1920s with that.
How does it differ, though, from reciting poetry out loud with a little bit of emphasis? I'm being negative for a moment.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting because it's not so rigid, right? There's a lot of space you can blur. Who am I to tell anyone what they're doing is not spoken word? Really? We haven't built a kind of canon around it the same way maybe we have with literature and put it into universities in the same way and taught it in the same way. It isn't set to the rigid structures of publishing companies and so on. It's really community-based, and that's meant that the lines of the genre are a lot more fluid. And so I think that's a really positive thing. It's also, you know, at times you're like, okay, well, how do we teach this, or how do we evaluate what's good? And I really think there are ways to do that. Definitely think there are ways to do that. And I spend a lot of time teaching spoken words, so I could get into that, but I'm not going to. I think really the thing with spoken word is that the performance is essential to other people, your audience, gathering the full meaning of your text. And it's approached much the way a playwright approaches writing a play, or a lyricist approaches writing a song. One of my favorite quotes is from Sherry D. Wilson in Calgary, who says, "The page is a resting place." And so you're really writing with this sense of your relationship to the text on paper as its home for a moment, but in its full expression, it involves relationship with audience and differs from theater in a big way in that we constantly break the fourth wall. That fourth wall is not really, you know, sometimes we'll keep it present, but we expect our audience to call out, to shout, to make noise. We in between our poems, we're going to dialogue with them. So we're really in a state of relationship and spend a lot of time thinking about that relationship as we create and as we perform.
Well, you mentioned create. So I'm curious, when you're working on a poem, are you thinking out loud, or are you writing something down and then kind of transposing it to voice? Tell me about the process.
Right. And I mean, I write a lot of textual poetry as well that I feel lives on the page permanently. So when I'm writing spoken word, I know it's spoken word. I know a poem's arriving to me in spoken word, mostly because of the voice it arrives in. So if the image or the language or the story that's coming to me is one that's in a more natural voice, more natural language, something that I feel like I need to be in communication about, and also a story that can be accessed readily. If I just tell it to you once, are you going to be able to hear what I have to tell you? That's how I know it's spoken word. Sometimes midway through you discover. But the creative process for me usually will start with like a line or an idea, something chasing around in my head, almost like a piece of dialogue. And then I may speak it through a few times. I generally write it down, but the editing process, I will be reciting it out loud, recording myself, listening to myself, finding out how it sounds, how it feels in my mouth, and I'll walk with it and see if it fits like a regular pattern of movement within me. And those really can transform the writing itself.
Would it be possible to hear one of your pieces?
Sure. Yeah. I will do a piece. I'll do a piece. I was, you know, just marveling yesterday about how close we are to the ocean at UBC, and that's one of the reasons I moved out to Vancouver recently, was to be closer to it. I'm actually terrified of the ocean, really terrified of it, and I spend a great deal of my life living on islands, most recently in Hawaii. But I'm going to do a piece about the ocean. A lot of my poetry talks about environmental issues, and this is written from the perspective of the ocean. Brother, there was a time I offered you everything. Food, water, and shelter. Company, kinship, safe harbor. I have taken you in my depths and known you, held you, washed you, and sent you home baptized. Do not mistake this for weakness. I am mistress only to the sky, and she weeps for me daily. You once wept for me, read my blush for thunder nightly. I held lightning in these teeth and kissed your feet electric, phosphorescent. You felt me rock as woman unbound in the hot wind of pleasure. Watched me curious as David encountering Goliath. I loved you fierce and patient, tidal rip and still. But you have forgotten my red evenings. You come hungry, unheeded, bear my skeletons as archaeology, brother. I am no museum. I have beached myself so you might bear witness to the power of sacrifice. Even as you turn from me, I am rising, drinking from poles and swelling, calling to my sisters, Indian, Arctic, soon you will know me as Kali, goddess of knives and suicide current, fingers, a trident of tsunami. There is no need to wonder who shaped your countries. I am the unmaker of Pangaea. I am God tongue who licked fossils into your mountains. I am mouth which swallowed Atlantis. I am no museum. The cold scoliosis of your bridges will crumble. The sky and I will roll tongues across one another, bareback and honest. Apocalypse is nature's word for procreation, and it is spring now. Pollen masses and dolphins are screwing in my depths, mammalian, and just as smart as you are, knowing water is stronger than iron. When my lover stirs hurricane bullwhips in heaven, they chirp madly, knowing we are not forgiving bodies. If you want me, come to me, human, bestial and imperfect. Come to me honest as seed at first frost. I will make room for your naked and glorious failure. As Goliath might have leaned down from the heavens, taken the stones from David's hands, and kissed him roughly, saying, you cannot kill me. You cannot run from me. There is nothing left to do but love me. As clay loves the hands that churn it, as praying mantis loves his wife in the moment of raw ecstasy, I make no promises. But come to me drunk with surrender. Come to me horrified with love, and I will take you. I will show you the insignificance of man to my deep salt canyons. I will teach you. I will warn you. And I will send you home, baptized.
Wow, that's fabulous. Now, how long did it take you to write that? And is this a poem that you did 4 years ago or 3 weeks ago?
That poem is from a few years ago. You know, some poems just show up on your doorstep, and that's an amazing moment. That one did not. It was a... there is a poetry thing in April's National Poetry Month, and people write 30 poems in 30 days. And I had written another little brainstorm that had a section of the ocean's voice in it, and eventually I worked it into that. I have a recording of it done with cello that's coming out on my upcoming album this summer. And so that was a whole other process of like layering it, working with a composer, and finding new space in it.
Pretty marvelous. Do you write everywhere and anywhere, or do you have a certain place where you're most comfortable?
I think it depends. I like silence a lot. I feel like writers can get so testy when noise happens, when they're in the middle of a moment. Yeah, I'm pretty versatile. I think partially because I travel constantly, so I've just had to learn to, whenever inspiration strikes, you put away everything else, you just ignore the people you're sitting with, and you just start writing.
But now you're at UBC in the MFA program. Can you explain that turn to at least academia?
Mm-hmm. It's been a really incredible opportunity. I mean, the program itself is so multifaceted, and I really wanted to push myself in new genres, and I felt like the right time to do that. And I think that UBC, the program, has 11 genres in it. Like, it really offers something that you don't find anywhere else in the world. And really asks you to kind of become like a triathlete. That's what this year has felt like to me. It's like, get really, really good at swimming, running, and biking. And you have to be as strong at all of them. We're going to have the same expectations for you in every category. And if you can do that, well then, your body would be so amazing. So that's what it feels like. We go through. Most of us are writing in three genres this year. And continuing to really stay diverse. And you see people who are just like, it's incredible what their writing looks like in different genres. So the program has been such an opportunity, and I've never produced this much writing in my life. It's crazy.
Okay, that's wonderful. Yeah. That's really good. So just to come back to the spokenness of spoken word poetry, how is it archived? How is it kept? Mm-hmm. If it's not taped, either video or audio, how does one access it other than attending performances?
Right. Well, I think that there is a lot of video and audio of it. There's a lot of albums and video poems. I think it's actually been really, really good at connecting with new media and social media, probably more than any form of literature, and that's why it's so on the rise right now. But there's also something really lovely about impermanence and at the moment of a story and the moment of sharing, in the same way that a photograph will never fully capture what a mountain looks like or what your journey to get to that top of the mountain was. Like, you can't, there is something essential in that sharing that you will never be able to capture. And I think part of that is because the audience profoundly impacts the performer. In my experience, and everyone I know, it's like we are transformed by what the audience gives us and give that back. And you're in this kind of like feedback loop of like really intimate, intense sharing. And that's such a beautiful thing and can be such a healing thing. And then it's gone, you know? I mean, you carry it with you, but it's really meant to be this like engaged, active thing.
So do you find your mood and your feelings change in the course of a performance in reaction to what the audience is feeling?
I think they can, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, I think really skilled performers can navigate and maybe even change what an audience is feeling without them noticing how much they've done it. And will kind of just, like, say I work a lot in school, so I'll like walk into a grade 8 class in the middle of the day and they've never met me before. And yes, you are a break from their regular lessons, so that's exciting. But you also, like, maybe they're hungry. Maybe they're, like, there are times when you walk into a classroom, imagine that's your audience, and you as an artist have to be like, okay, how do I work with this energy? I'm a yoga teacher as well, and in my teacher training, I remember her talking about like the energetic ecosystem of a room and how you're navigating that. And a lot of that is the skill of banter between poems, which I have a friend, Brendan McLeod, who offers workshops on it. He's really quite talented at it. And how we banter between poetry can really change what the experience of the audience is and help them sink back in with you. Like, if you're doing a bunch of serious poems, you need to crack some jokes in between, or it's too much.
So when you say banter, even ask the audience their reaction to the poem you've just read, or to kind of shift the mood a little bit, bring them into some sort of dialogue?
Yeah, I think you're shifting the mood a little bit. You're bringing them into, something that allows to give them a break, maybe, from those kinds of journeyings and, transition between different emotional states that your poetry might evoke.
Speaking of emotional states... If you were to write a spoken word poem tonight, what do you think would be its subject?
Oh.
Have you been mulling something for a while, or you prefer the fresh, spontaneous, just seeing something and thinking this might be the right kind of subject?
Yeah, I've had a really productive week where I actually wrote three small pieces, like this week, so I'm not sure what else is... left in me. The three pieces I wrote this week, I wrote just a very short, maybe 1 minute poem to Aretha Franklin about like reimagining her words in this strange new world as I like watch the rain. And I wrote a poem about asking someone out to prom. My department's having a prom, and what it means to kind of reimagine high school from like a space of being like out and queer and how that changes this idea of like, let's go to prom and do it right, basically. And the other one I just finished was about the blue whales off the coast of the Pacific and my father never learning how to swim. So that's the work I've been doing in spoken word this week. And it's been fun.
Still water. Still the ocean.
Yes, the ocean. We actually had an interdisciplinary course between the music department and creative writing. So I was paired with a very talented guitarist named Abe Landa, and we were asked to create, kind of under the guidance of John K. Sampson, a piece about, and Christine Fellows, those were the two instructors, a piece based on the BD Biodiversity Museum. So we were writing about the huge blue whale skeleton there and our relationship to the memory of nature.
It's fabulous. Do you have one more short poem we might be able to, or a few verses you'd like to end with?
Sure. I could do a short poem about Georgia O'Keeffe, actually. I recently created a deck of tarot cards with each card having a poem attached to it, and Georgia O'Keeffe was the hermit card, if you're familiar with the tarot. And the quote that goes with this is, "Slits in nothingness are not very easy to paint." One day yellow flowers will blossom beside your yellow bones, and yellow sun will laugh over the ghost of you. A slice of lemon, daffodil, urine, dust bones, and old linen. How many shades did you study? Or did the hollyhock unfold itself beneath your horsehair brush like water leaks from rain barrels? It just looked so pretty, you said. Stop asking me about God, you might have added. Gender and God don't matter. It's quiet here. That's the only church I care for. Georgia, the more you turned into the desert, the more photographs we took of your quiet, the more questions we asked. But you spoke only color, easel sunk in umber, more in love with silence than love. A crone who knew the beauty of cattle bones and copper. Some say death is always waiting on our left shoulder, like a moth fluttering quiet in the ear. Is the sound more exquisite the closer you listen? There's no fear in it.
their slate blue and hollyhock, the sharp skull of a ram you found. One day yellow flowers will blossom beside your yellow bones, and yellow sun will laugh over the ghost of you. Isn't that the miracle? Isn't that the only thing worth painting?
Absolutely marvelous. Thanks again to our guest, the spoken word poet, Alessandra Naccarato. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here.